Gareth Edwards, before he unlocked the era of modern Godzilla films, got his start with a lower budget and more personal story in the giant monster genre. But will his directorial debut measure up to his remake masterpiece, or will it be but a stepping stone onto greater things? Find out along with us as we dive into a rich creature-filled experience this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, Monsters.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Photog tour guide, Miles, and joining me is an aloof heiress ready to get back out of an engagement, Hattrick. I totally boinked that entirely.
I'm going to sell this ring, Miles. Yeah, we're back. Start of season 7. Woo! Very, feel like we're going to get sick of it before too long, but season 7, all of the 2010s. And this is the era where I was like, I'm going to go see these movie in theaters. But I definitely did not see this one in theaters because
I did not see this one in theaters like either. I don't know if this was available when I was going to the theaters, because
I don't
like
know if it had a huge wide release. It did.
Yeah,
much
I don't
better
think it did
internationally, I believe. And of course, we're talking about 2010's Gareth Edwards directed film Monsters. It premiered at South by Southwest in March, and I think its limited release in the U.S. was October 29th, and it did much better in the U.K., where Gareth Edwards is from. It came out in December 3rd of 2010 and supposedly had a budget of less than $500,000. I've seen reports that it was much less than $500,000.
Which is very impressive considering the effects that we do see.
Yes, and it raised $4.2 million, so it was a huge success as far as kind of independent film goes, and I remember you had not seen this movie before, is that correct?
No, I had not. This is one that I always missed, and then as soon as we started talking about doing this podcast, I opted not to watch it. Are we watching the sequel?
Might as well.
Okay.
Might as well. The same thing. I've not seen
the sequel. Which is not done by Gareth Edwards, I think.
No, he was in pre-production for
Godzilla, right?
Godzilla, I think, when this one started. So he
they were like, yeah, you go do the other thing that's much better than what we're doing.
Both he and Scoot McNairy, I think, served as producers or executive producers in some capacity, but I don't think they were really involved with the production of the film. I've not researched that movie and I've not seen it, so I'm excited to get to it. What I do know about it is it takes place in the Middle East, and I think is a little bit more pro in Western invaders kind of in the Middle East movie than this.
Oh, that's awkward.
This film.
That's gonna be fun to suss through. Great.
Right, but you're ready to talk about Monsters.
Mm-hmm. I had pretty high hopes coming into this one because obviously Gareth Edwards, you know, makes a splash, goes on to direct 2014's Godzilla, which helps, you know, ignite the new kaiju explosion that happens in the last 10 years. So I was really excited about watching this movie. I'm really interested in hearing like what you think about it, because there's a lot I like and a lot that I'm kind of ho-hum about. But before we get into that, Patrick, I do need to tell you, I do need to ask you, what's in a title?
I dislike the title Monsters.
It's a little basic, I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just called Monsters. Anthology television show, but
yeah, we're clowning on Monster, the Asylum film. So I can't not clown on Monsters.
Agreed.
And all the other translations in other countries, I think, kind of serve as a better title. Hungary's translates to There Are Monsters, or like, you know,
that's fine.
You know, something a little bit more than just the word. The Czech Republic called it Forbidden Zone, which is also great. Poland, Zone X. Taiwan, it translates to Alien Forbidden Zone, which also, I think, has some good kind of connotations. They're
all fine. I mean, none of it's great.
Monsters slash extraterrestrials in Japan and just infestation in Turkish. I just think they all work a little better. I really like Forbidden Zone. I think that's
probably the best of the bunch.
Yeah, the Czech Republic one. But yeah, the movie is I think a pretty original idea. There was a satellite that had samples bringing back from like Jupiter or something of alien life, and it broke up over Mexico, and those samples sprouted life, made giant monsters, and made an infected zone of these kaiju-sized aliens about half of Mexico. And America has held off by creating a giant kind of wall slash border thing. And the movie follows only two characters, a photographer played by Scoot McNairy and a heiress played by Whitney Able. And the photographer's, Scoot McNairy's employer, pays him to take the boss's daughter out of Mexico through this infected zone and back into America. I mean, that's the entire film, really, in a nutshell. It is just a travelogue. You know, it's one of those things where they say there are only like two plots in all of film, and that's a new guy comes to town and a man and a woman go on a trip. And this is a man and a woman go on a trip through Kaiju Mexico. I enjoy this movie a lot. I saw it a number of years ago at first, and I don't think any of the trailers really prepare you for what the movie is actually about. They I think push it more as like a really exciting kind of almost horror like experience, where I don't think that is what this movie actually is trying to do. I think unease would be the emotion I got from a lot of the movie, but part of that unease is what the characters are just feeling because there's this
idea that anything could happen at any moment and you don't know what. And they've given you this idea that you're entering this infected zone because initially they're supposed to take a ferry.
They're first supposed to go on like a train. The train tracks get destroyed by monsters, so they have to go.
Right. They're supposed to go on this ferry that goes from Mexico to the States. It's a legal thing. It's all squared. It's on the up and up. And then our good photographer buddy decides to, after he puts the heiress to bed, continues to go out drinking, hooks up with some girl. As soon as the heiress, Sam, that's her name, sees that he's kind of, because they've been kind of vibing a little bit, but like she's engaged. But she's like, oh, do you want to have coffee with me? And we can like, you know, chit chat. And as soon as she sees that, like, oh, there's a girl in his bed, like she's like peacing out. For whatever reason, he chases after her, leaving all of his belongings unsupervised. And that girl, and this is actually one of my least favorite parts of the entire movie, steals all their passports and just pieces out.
So
I don't know what the opposite of plot armor is, but that's what this is.
That's my favorite factoid from this movie I'll share with you. That girl, Miles, is also played by Whitney Able. Because they didn't have any other actress. They just like filmed her feet in the bed in
two
shots. Because, you know, to get into the nitty gritty of how this movie was made, this was like seven people were in one van that moved around Costa Rica, Guatemala, Mexico, Belize, and the U.S. They shot this film over the course of 3 weeks. You know, Gareth Edwards was in the van. The two main actors, Abel McNairy, there's a sound operator, a line producer, a Mexican fixer or someone that spoke Spanish to help them out, and a driver. That was the entire production crew for the film.
I love that. I love how gonzo this film feels.
To be honest, it didn't feel like that to me. It felt like a really well-produced, you know, Hollywood piece. I was super surprised to find out it didn't have, you know, all the, you know, and it also looks great, but it wasn't on film. It was a digital movie, you know.
Right. So I remember when it came out, and I remember the hubbub of like, oh yeah, it was a small team. They did it all by themselves. And so I remember watching this movie, and I guess Gonzo is the wrong word, because it like, you're right, it does feel very sharp. It feels very like kind of put together like a Hollywood film, but there is still an indiness to this movie. Mm-hmm. And I also love that, you know, we're still in this pre kaiju boom era of like, we're going to do monsters, but we're not going to do monsters. And I think what's so good about this movie is like the threat. It's almost like a good, like the original Halloween or something like that, where like the threat mm-hmm. of the monster is way scarier than any monster you see on screen. Cause you see stuff, you see like a jet get like, you know, popping along the water like a shark, and then it pops up, and then some creature pulls it down. It's one of my favorite sequences of the entire movie.
Yeah, it is. It's great because no one in the scene like knows what is happening. I mean, none of the characters on the boat understand what is happening. So we are finding out with them, because that's not anything any of the guides on the boat have seen before. You know, we see this freaky thing, and to me, that is a good equivalent of a very similar but also completely unsimilar film in Cloverfield. Cloverfield has, you know, the Statue of Liberty head being thrown across Manhattan.
Yeah, you can't really beat that.
But yeah, it's an equal amount of like craziness. And this movie is compared to that a lot, because that movie is obviously the 9/11 of kaiju films. That is like the action happening. And Gareth Edwards has talked about this movie a great deal as being what happens after the invasion's already over. What happens once the kaiju have kind of won? And
which is interesting, but like
the kaiju have been here for
6 years, I think.
6 years?
Some of that.
So yeah, they've ceded a whole bunch of land that they just cannot, you know.
Yeah, so most of Mexico is the infected zone. And I think my biggest problem with this movie is honestly the two main characters, and not necessarily because of the acting. It's like, so we have this heiress who seems to have a concern about her engagement that we're never given any information about. Like, yeah, you feel like she's not either getting cold feet or like there's something wrong with that relationship, and they never tell you about it. Mm-hmm. And then we have our photographer, who seems like he's supposed to be kind of like morally loose, but is a very conservative person.
Yeah. And he's a father, which he is concealing from her at first. But he's not really in the picture, but he still seems very concerned about, you know, kind of being there. Money is also an issue for him.
A lot of it feels like first film, like, you know, just feeling out characters. Like, it's not a problem these characters aren't that well developed, but it also is a massive problem, because when they have their moments, like, it's hard for me to get behind them. And especially how ambiguously this movie is, because this movie starts with this sequence that seems to show the characters that we come to know getting killed at the beginning of the movie. And then we have this whole sequence at the very end where like they share a kiss, and then it's like they're separated, and it's like, okay, that's it. That's the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird sequence of events.
It is. And, you know, once again, diving into the production of this film, they had a general script, but Gareth Edwards pretty much was relying on Scoot McNairy and Whitney Able to bring the characters to life. I don't think they had, you know, all the dialogue written out. Supposedly they shot 200 hours of footage for the movie, and, you know, that got edited down to an hour and a half. And I'm sure an excruciating thing, but a lot of it was them just creating the scenes. And these are the only two. Well, no, there technically are more Hollywood actors in the film. I think some of the soldiers are played by actors, but everyone that they talk to and interact with in the film are non-actors. They are actually people that live in Guatemala and Costa Rica and in Mexico, where the movie was filmed. And that to me is astounding, because the ticket seller that they have a couple interactions with, I love. He's so good. And it's because he's a real person. He's not.
Yeah, no, he is fantastic.
But Gareth Edwards obviously couldn't do that on a Godzilla, but here he got to stretch his kind of creative legs. And he said he was going to find the movie not behind the computer screen, right, in the script. He was going to find it on location, you know, shooting with these actors. And he cast Scoot McNairy, I think, on the back of another independent movie that Scoot did early on. And I'm entirely sure. In Search of a Midnight Kiss is another super kind of low budget film that Scoot did. And he cast him as that, but he wanted someone, like a couple of actors that would already have on-screen chemistry together. So Scoot suggested his girlfriend at the time, Whitney Able, and Gareth loved her, and they brought them on. So they were dating when this movie was being filmed. I think they got married after this and
they broke did
up and a couple years they, ago, but
yeah, they were married for almost 9 years. They've got two kids.
Yeah. So, I mean, they which is so funny because it doesn't seem like they have a ton of chemistry towards the beginning.
It really doesn't.
But I think it does get better as they go on. And the thing is, like, as good as she is, I think Scoot McNairy is actually a great actor. So
he's a solid actor. I mean, he's had more of a career than she has.
Yeah.
I mean, he's currently playing Woody Guthrie in the Bob Dylan movie, which is starring Timothy Chalamet. You know, he's
done a lot of stuff.
You know, he consistently gets work, and that's nothing to say anything about Whitney Able. She has worked fairly consistently. I would say that, you know, Scoot McNairy's resume probably reads a little bit better, but, like, I mean, it's not all winners either.
You
get some Wild Crocodiles, you get some Batman v Supermans, but then you get some good stuff like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, I did that. But no, I mean, like, he's been in bigger stuff and consistently so. I don't think either of them give a tremendous performance in this movie. I think she's aloof, but, like, she's, you know, charismatic, and he is just a little kind of stiff.
She seems like she's been kidnapped about half of the movie. Like, she doesn't want to be there.
It's she feels like she's not supposed to be there.
Well, it's hard for, I think, the actress to convey that she doesn't want to go back to America when also the other existential threat of monsters is there.
Well, and that's the thing.
I think that's what we're supposed to get.
I think that's what bothers me about the script is, like, there is internal stuff with both these characters that I wish they had hashed out in the movie, because in a great kaiju movie, that would be kind of the whole point. And they don't really do that in this movie. It's more about the journey. Given the limited resources they had, they do a great job with this journey. But I do think that this should have been a character-driven piece. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this movie falls a little flat for me, is because it's not.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the creatures we see, because this is, I love this whole idea. I love that there is, like, this like, was it a meteor shower or something where, like, stuff landed?
Satellite carrying alien life was broken up, and we see various parts. Supposedly they live in the rivers and come out at night, but at one point we see these weird alien fungus on trees that are, like, kind of photoluminescent, and I was blown away by that. I was like, oh, this is such cool world building.
That's very, very good.
And we don't see why they use gas masks, and it's, like, a major motif, but we find out that America is gassing the forest and things to try and kill the extraterrestrials. They don't really call them kaiju. They don't call them monsters. I think they say extraterrestrials a good deal. But yeah, so some of the people that are leading them through the jungle talk about how America drops kind of, like, Agent Orange kind of things in the forest to try and kill them. But the monsters. Another thing that blows me away about this movie is Gareth Edwards wrote, directed, but also did special effects for the movie. He was on a laptop making these kaiju creatures, and they look really good.
They do. Know,
for his first movie ever, they're great, and they're creepy looking, but they're also, I mean, the one thing Gareth Edwards does amazing is, well, we really only see them at the end of the movie. He gets the scale so well and the perspective of these monsters well.
Seeing monsters like kind of like languishing above a Texaco station, like,
yes,
that did so much for me. Like, that's one of the best shots the entire movie.
And, well, I can't wait to get to his Godzilla, but there's so many things in the foreground as well, like telephone wires and the overhang from the gas station. So many things mm-hmm. that help frame the size, because they talk about how some of them can grow 100 meters, which is like
Godzilla size.
Godzilla, yeah. You know, at the ones we see at the end, I don't feel are that tall.
No, they're like 40, yeah. 50 feet tall, maybe.
Oh, I'd say larger than that.
You think so?
Yeah, but I mean, they're absolutely terrifying as well. But they turn into like this kind of metaphor at the end for the main characters, because they're only coming out at night to try and find a mate. You know, that's what they do at the very end. There's two of these giant creatures kind of come together to find love. And they don't, until you find out that the beginning of the movie is actually the end, they don't kill everybody, but they do, because that's when the military shows up and probably starts shooting at them. We also find out they're not super aggressive unless you attack them.
That's what pisses me off the most. It's like, oh, they're not really aggressive creatures. Just leave them alone. And of course, we have keep poking the bear.
They're just giant animals, which is another thread that kind of continues on into Godzilla, you know, into Monster mm-hmm. vs. Godzilla. I love this movie because I really think it is its own genre of kaiju film, which is post-apocalyptic, you know, world building, showing what happens after a kaiju invasion has already happened and how the world changes because of it. I've added to our list Love and Monsters, which is another kind of post-apocalyptic kaiju film.
I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of that movie, but it's also very YA romance. Like,
it's great though, and it's also
I'm a huge fan of it. Like, but also that's my thing too. But yeah, I love that movie.
They did so much with so little world building, just some signs, and they used, you know, kind of post Hurricane Katrina destroyed buildings and things in the production, and I believe this world almost more than any other kind of creation. This movie is also compared a lot to District 9 by Neil Blomkamp.
I can see that. I definitely see there's some like shared DNA there.
And, you know, there's some CGI that doesn't quite work as well. Like, you know, he CGIs some tanks kind of like rolling through Mexican cities, and it's like, oh, well, that's a shame. But it's like broad daylight kind of stuff, so it's hard to get perfect. But I actually really like the monsters. Critics were pretty positive on this film. It got a 73%. Users, not so much. This movie sits at 53%. I think mostly because people probably went into this expecting something else and did not think it was going to be a romantic drama and, you know, super politically infused film as well. You know, we haven't really talked about it, but like the fact that they're making an illegal border crossing to get back into the U.S. is very interesting. And also the border wall does not work in this movie. At the very end, America, I mean,
it's pretty much wide open too.
Yeah, invaded. It's crazy. Perhaps one of the most interesting criticisms of this film came from Roger Ebert, who gave it 3.5 stars. You know, this is towards the end of his life, end of his career, but that is huge for Roger Ebert, mm-hmm. especially for, you know, a monster movie like this. At the end of his review, he said, quote, "Edwards is brilliant at evoking the awe and beauty he has been building toward. And at last, we fully realize the film's ambitious arc. I think the lesson may be life has its reasons. Motives are pretty universal. Monsters are in the eye of the beholder." I don't know if that's the actual theme, but there is a point to him, really, because he
shows the monsters are pretty benign and the humans are the problem.
Yeah, the monsters of the title, I don't know if they're necessarily monsters, the aliens or humans. I think it is kind of like just the circumstances that the world is in at this point that makes people not be able to live their truth or live a happy life or kills them. But definitely they build up these big spooky monsters and they're pretty, I mean, they're just like lumbering. They remind me because they sound like
giraffes.
They're big giraffes. They're big squid monsters at the end. They look great. Yeah, this we already mentioned this movie has a sequel about 4 years later with Gareth Edwards executive producing, but he's handed off the directing chair to another, I think, a British director, Tom Green. Not that Tom Green.
I wish it was that Tom Green, though. Can you imagine if it was that Tom Green?
Oh, boy. It moves forward a decade. So this is like, I think the world is in a worse state. I'm excited to see the film, but
I am too.
Before we get to that one, let's get to rating this film.
Okay.
Miles, what you got for your personal enjoyment for Monsters?
I'm not going to lie. I think this movie's good, but not great. I think that it has a lot of noticeable marks of a first film in terms of the characterization. And I think that's where the movie suffers most, is like these characters and how they relate to the world around them need to be really fleshed out. They need to like kind of come alive. And while the charisma of the two actors does pick up throughout the movie, I don't think narratively we really get that. We get a lot of teasing. We get a lot of ho-hum about, like, you know, what the deal is with her relationship with her fiance and what the relationship is with the monsters and the rest of the world. I think the actors are also, they're good. They're often good. The beginning, they're a little rough. That it feels very much like an indie picture. Like some of the sound quality is a little off at first, but I think the world that Gareth Edwards built is really interesting. I think, you know, the kind of shut up, get in the van attitude that he took to filmmaking is commendable. It has led to something that is kind of priceless. So for my personal enjoyment of the movie itself, I'm giving it, this is going to sound like a huge like mark against it, but I'm just talking about, like, you know, walking away from this movie, how I felt about it. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a good movie, but there's a lot of choices that I don't love. And there's a lot of ideas that I wish were fleshed out more, to where I feel this is worth watching. I definitely think everyone should seek it out and check it out, but it's not a home run for me. What about you?
I, having seen this movie before, I think I can appreciate it a little bit more, just for, in our catalog, how different it is from a lot of other films.
Sure.
It is a movie that, I mean, it's quite literally like they're never standing still. So it at the very least, it is crazy what they've been able to accomplish in that aspect. It is very much a very cool adventure film. I just love the world building so much. I think it is definitely a few steps away from a masterpiece, but I enjoy this almost as much as Cloverfield. You know, this is the slow burn.
Oh, you looking to die, son?
Cloverfield is the super action version of this, but honestly, this was supposed to be found footage.
No, I you know what? I couldn't help but feel bad for Gareth Edwards, because it seemed like every time he was approaching an idea, something else was being done, and so, like, he had to change it like 4 times.
So I think his original idea was to have the Scoot McNairy character be a videographer, you know, trying to like get footage of these monsters. And then he moved away from that when he heard about, you know, what Cloverfield was actually going to be.
But yeah, because I think originally he wanted to do kind of a War of the Worlds type of situation, but then Spielberg was doing that movie, and then he wanted to do found footage in like a Blair Witch style, but then he found about Cloverfield, and it's like, man, homeboy just can't win.
Yeah, but this movie is a great slow burn. It is as different from Cloverfield as you can get, and there's a lot to feast your eyes on. Even not, there's no monster destruction on screen, but the after effects of the destruction are so beautiful. I think very good acting, very serviceable special effects for the budget and him being the first time filmmaker. So I enjoyed this. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. And
Yeah,
I think it's a great film. I can honestly put it on again and probably enjoy it. For its technical aspects, I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. And, you know, it's getting so high because budget wise, I think this is one of the best films for its budget that we've ever seen. They went into filming with a lot of confidence and not a lot of scripted dialogue. So they really relied on Whitney and Scoot to kind of form the core of this film. But I think what makes this movie great is that world building, the set dressing that they did, and having these real life extras, these supernumerary actors who make this feel like almost like a documentary more than anything else. Miles, what about you for the technical aspect?
So for the technical aspect, I really, really think that the character work needs to be refreshed. The script portion of this movie is the weakest to me. That said, I think both actors do a really solid job. I think Gareth Edwards does a tremendous job as a director. I think the creature design is extremely interesting because, especially when you're not coming from it from a creature as character aspect and more of a creature as a creature, it's really interesting to see what people come up with. And there does seem to be a really concerted effort to kind of create a consistency of what kind of creatures have kind of invaded our world. And for as small of a budget as he had to do that to the degree that he does is commendable. Like I said, I do wish the character work was a lot better. And that does drag this movie down a little bit for me. But I do agree with you that in terms of the technical aspect, the as weak as the script might be for me in spots, the direction's fantastic. The actors are pretty competent. The creature design is amazing. There are some gorgeous, gorgeous shots. Like I said, like one of my favorite shots is of like seeing the silhouette of the creature as the kind of glow of an old Texaco gas station is kind of illuminating the night. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I'm with you. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. We share a document, so I wrote 4 out of 10 just to freak him out.
I was like, there's no way. For its kind of importance as a kaiju movie, I think this is extremely important for Gareth Edwards getting Godzilla. Yeah. And this is mostly a kind of a partially kaiju adjacent film because, you know, while the title is the monsters themselves, the more they're a looming threat, they're not a direct threat in this film until the very end when it turns into a little bit of a hide and seek with the monsters. But, the ground team talking about that 100-meter monster wandering around Mexico really got my goat. It really got me going. I love that we never see that. I just like that's like a story mm-hmm. that they're telling. But the whole world building of this movie, I wish the excellence of this film continued into the sequel. But from what I've heard, that one does not take on the kind of same.
I'm not surprised when you see that no one importance. From the original is involved. You can kind of. Yeah.
So I'm giving this a 7 out of 10 for its evocative nature, kind of as a kaiju film. It is, you know, ranging on kaiju adjacent for a few reasons, but is still like I said, it's so similar to your Demakings, where it is a movie that has kaiju in it, and like it's, you know, a main part of the plot, but there's not a named kaiju that's like kind of front and center. So what about you, Miles?
So I kind of hate this because it's gonna like super weigh my score, but I don't think I can give this score I don't think I can give this movie anything but the score in terms of its importance, which I'm just gonna go out a 10 out of 10 because without this movie doing what it does, one, this movie understands kaiju cinema and wanting to do something different with the genre and doing something evocative and interesting. It does attempt to do that. But not only that, this movie gets him Godzilla, which does help kickstart the entire new kaiju explosion, which the legendary Godzilla is explicitly like, you know, responsible for. And I mean, again, this is like the kaiju, like Black Christmas, like Halloween gets all of the accolades for being like kickstarting the slasher movement. But you go back to 1974's Black Christmas and like, oh, this is here. Like the elements are here. So this is the granddaddy. And so while I don't always love what this movie does or where this movie kind of fails to live up to what it can do as an independent picture, I think this movie is monumentally important because this is a extremely important moment in kaiju cinema because of this film, Gareth Edwards, and because you see moments in his direction of like, oh yeah, I see this in his 2014 Godzilla film. I see like what he does, and even some of the movements are there. And yes, this might be like telling about how I feel about 2014 Godzilla film, but like the 2014 Godzilla film does really kick things off. Without that movie, we don't get most of what we have now.
Yeah, and it's maligned a little bit in the series as a whole because it is probably the one that feels the most incongruous with the other films, but it's a super solid film.
It's a super solid movie. I'm a big fan. I mean, there are other movies in the legendary like MonsterVerse that I'm a bigger fan of, and I know Patrick knows exactly what movie I'm talking about.
I will say, though, yeah, Gareth Edwards just has a way of framing Godzilla in that movie that is, bar none, I think, the best scaling for a kaiju.
Oh, I mean, the posters and even the teaser where you saw the paratroopers coming down, you saw the flares coming down off Godzilla's scales. Like, it's incredible. But without monsters, he does not get that job. Without that job, he does not, like, because, I mean, it could have gone to anyone else. It could have been a big flop. We would not have the MonsterVerse. We would not have the new kaiju explosion that we have now. Like, I'm not kidding. I legit think this is one of the most important movies, like this in Cloverfield. In terms of American,
I cite Cloverfield as giving more credit to us getting the Godzilla movie. That
it's true, and I agree with you. But this does not get this. If without this movie, Gareth Edwards does not get that job. That movie, as it is, doesn't exist. So I can't not give this a 10 out of 10 in terms of like what this leads to.
Okay,
if that makes sense. Like, this movie's extremely important in that respect. And you know me, as far as cultural significance, I weigh heavily in that aspect.
I also do think
he thinks long and hard about what would happen if a kaiju invasion happened, but what's happened afterwards. And I think I want
Gareth Edwards to do another kaiju. Well, I mean, he's doing his next film is a Jurassic World film,
which it can't get worse than Dominion. So,
you
can't. Like, that's probably the worst Jurassic movie I've ever seen.
In making this movie, one of his, you know, he's a huge Steven Spielberg fan. And one of the things I can feel it from when he saw the original Jurassic Park is he said he wanted, you know, like a lot of people to see what were these dinosaurs would be like if they were let loose on the mainland. And that's what the Jurassic World series has turned into. But
just not great.
That is what I think got him to make this film. I think thought about it when he saw some fishermen in another country bringing up a huge net, and it was like, oh well, what if there was a giant monster?
I definitely get that, but I think
Godzilla is super important, and it is crazy that is his next film after this one. And if you like Godzilla, definitely check this movie out.
So, like, Gareth Edwards,
bar none, it's super important to him.
Gareth Edwards is 9 years older than us, which
old man Gareth.
Well, here's the thing is, like, on one end, like, okay, yeah, he's a full era older, but he also, when he was 17 years old, so still impressionable, saw Jurassic Park for the first time.
Yeah.
And as someone who was like 8 when that movie came out, or 9, like, in terms of movies that made an impression on me as a kid, like, I cannot overstate like how big of an impact Jurassic Park had. Mm-hmm. Like that movie when it came out and the special effects that it had and the storytelling, like everything about it, like it is such a seismic moment in Western cinema that I'm not shocked that the people responsible for the MonsterVerse were so influenced by that movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm stoked. We're starting off here, Miles, season 7, with both of us giving this film an 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10, which...
I bet you didn't see me going that high, did you?
No, I figured, you know, I was kind of on the bubble there, so I was like, well, if he doesn't like this much, I can understand it going down to a 7. The importance
for me is it's too great.
Yeah. It's a great film in a few different ways, and it leads to even more greatness in this kaiju boom. So a great way to kick off season 7. Where can folks find us if they want to talk about the upcoming season, talk about last season, talk to us about stuff, Miles?
Well, if you want to talk to us about stuff, you can always go to the CosmicCrit.com page, click on that Discord invite, and join the Cosmic Crit channel, because that is direct 1v1 access to us almost 24/7. But if you want to email us, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can tweet to us at kaijuversushistory or visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends. Let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju vs. History, to see all of our reviews and watch our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week throughout the season?
All right. Well, we're continuing on into season 7. We're going to go from this low budget SSXW film. All right,
well, tell people what that means, because like I know what it means, but like
South by Southwest, a low budget South by Southwest indie film. We're going from that to an extremely bloated summer blockbuster movie, making a remake forged in the hallowed halls of Mount Olympus appear on the big screen. That is right. Tune in along with us next time for History versus Clash of the Titans.